I'm Aaron Schachter, in for Marco Werman, and you're tuned to The World. In Russia, speaking your mind can land you in jail. So opponents of President Vladimir Putin have to pick their battles very carefully. Today, they decided to throw caution to the wind and speak out. Hundreds of people rallied near the Kremlin to protest against the government's treatment of Alexei Navalny. He's one of Russia's most prominent opposition figures, and he's under house arrest at the moment. Earlier today, he was convicted of fraud and handed a suspended prison sentence. His brother Oleg, though, was sentenced to 3.5 years in jail in a case that's widely seen as politically motivated. Correspondent Masha Eismont was at the Moscow protest this evening, but she started her day in the courthouse. She says the verdict that was handed down stunned many Muscovites.
It was surprising for the majority of the people. Very few people could think of Alexei staying actually out of prison and his brother taking, as they say now, as a hostage. And it was a lot of anger all around because people understand that, I mean, if you are a politician, if you are fighting against the power, if you are an opposition leader, you understand that you may end up in the prison in the countries like Russia. But your brother, I mean, the brother of Alexei, who is somebody that had nothing to do with politics, who is a father of two small children, you know, he was kind of taken hostage. The word hostage was one of the very used in various comments on
right.
the situation.
So the shock is not so much that Alexei Navalny was given the 3.5 year suspended sentence, but that his brother was sentenced to jail for 3.5 years.
Exactly. And that's how Alexei also, he reacted in a very emotional way. And you could see by his face and the way he reacted on it that he was very much angered and depressed by the decision. He said that this is the worst, you know.
Filthy, I think, is the word he said. The filthy decision.
Yes, exactly. The most filthy decision.
Now, Navalny, after these decisions came down, he called for protests. And even though he's supposed to be under house arrest, at least until he's set free, he tweeted photos of himself on a Moscow metro headed to the rally. And then what happened?
He said that house arrest is okay, but I decided to be close to all of you. So I'm going to Manezhne Square, which is near the Kremlin, one of the most central squares of Moscow. He did not make it up towards Manezhne Square. He was arrested.
Now, Masha, so you've moved now to a cafe, and also it's a bit warmer there. Take a moment, if you would, and tell us what the protests were like there out on the streets.
There was a line of policemen, and they were all telling everyone to go away. Quite peacefully, I mean. But if someone would shout something loudly or have a small sheet of paper with Navalny's name or something, they would arrest this person. So the last arrested person on my eyes, it happened maybe 15 minutes ago.
Listen, tell me, I know you say you can't see all the protesters, only sort of the few hundred that are gathered with you. But is there any way to tell how much of a movement this is now? I mean, as you say, it's below zero there in Moscow. It's nighttime.
Yes, honestly, now, at this very moment, me and people around myself, as we talk to each other, we understand that this is definitely not one of the biggest protests that that we have witnessed.
Right.
But Russia is very unpredictable, and no one have predicted the collapse of Soviet Union. No one have predicted the start of the protest in 2011. No one could predict what will come out today. And although it doesn't look like today is a start of something big, but who knows, maybe in a few days it will come, this start. Maybe it will come in 10 years. You never know what's happening.
Reporter Masha Eismont there in Moscow. As we heard, the protest today came after Alexei Navalny and his brother were convicted in a fraud case. For more on what that means, we turn now to veteran Moscow-based correspondent Charles Maines.
Alexei Navalny has always been kind of a thorn in the Kremlin's side, and I think this case really reflects a lack of decision in terms of the government on how to handle him. You know, the suspended sentence which they gave him today of 3.5 years essentially keeps him kind of sidelined, but more importantly, the sentence given to his brother for the same amount, but in prison, works as kind of a shackle around Mr. Navalny going forward.
Now, as you mentioned, Navalny's brother, Oleg Navalny, was sentenced to 3.5 years in jail. Alexei got a 3.5 year suspended sentence. Critics are saying Oleg's only real crime, if any crime was committed at all, is that he's Alexei Navalny's brother. This all feels really throwbacky, you know, to the KGB of the 1970s.
I think it's no doubt that this is an intimidation tactic. The idea that if you participate in politics, if you go against sort of the current thinking, that you risk not only yourself, but your family now.
All right, let's step back just a moment to the reason the brothers were put on trial in the first place. They were accused of defrauding the French cosmetic company Yves Rocher. What has been Yves Rocher's response throughout this trial?
Well, the important thing to note is this was actually a subsidiary of Yves Rocher. So, in fact, they withdrew the legal complaint that apparently had been submitted on their behalf. So that looked pretty flimsy going in, but the case kind of ground forward, which again was a symbol that this was, in fact, a politically motivated case from the very beginning.
Well, Yves Rocher didn't come forward and say, you know, wait a minute, we don't agree with this. He did not embezzle anything, right?
Right. And I think that was another issue, was that, of course, in terms of the corporate headquarters, there was a lot of silence there. But in terms of the actual local distributor, the Russian subsidiary, they, in fact, withdrew their complaint against Navalny Brothers. So for those looking to find sort of cause that this was a real embezzlement case, that there was real corruption here, it seemed pretty flimsy all along.
I guess I wonder, though, what can we interpret from Yves Rocher's relative silence, either in Russia or corporate headquarters?
You have this split that goes on in a lot of the world, frankly, that business as usual, people want to make money, and some of these big corporations, that's their mission. And then the kind of inner workings of it and how that affects people's lives. So, I mean, I think in the same way we've seen with the sanctions, a lot of the companies that have been doing business with Russia and quite successfully over the past several years are not all that happy about the sanctions that were levied against the Kremlin over the annexation of Crimea. A lot of them would prefer to go ahead with business as usual, but they're being forced by their government's hand not to do so. And here, you know, there's no sanctions that prevent Yves Rocher from doing business in Russia. And so, in a way, I'm not surprised. I think it's just sort of business as usual.
Now, recently, it seems the political opposition in Russia has been largely muted. Are the protests that are happening today a sign of the tides turning?
We'll see. I mean, I think Navalny himself, as you know, made his way towards the Kremlin after he violated his own home arrest clause. But now that he's violated that clause, we'll see how the authorities choose to press forward. But I think just going wider, I mean, I think if you look at this last year in Russia and all the things that have happened, I mean, you back up and you think about we had the Sochi Olympics beginning the year, and Russia was really looking strong. And then this Crimea crisis happens, and suddenly, you know, you've got the economy in a tailspin over oil and sanctions. You've got this sort of fear of opposition members. I mean, this kind of obsession with Navalny and what he can do to the authorities. And then you just see how the prices and the economy has gone sort of haywire. So how regular Russians, maybe ones who haven't been so active in the past, how they'll react to what's happening here is the big question going forward.
And finally, Charles, Navalny, from a Western perspective, seems very black and white. He's a good guy. Putin, not necessarily a good guy. Is it that simple?
I don't think it's that simple in the sense that Alexei Navalny is a complicated figure. I mean, certainly he's toyed with nationalism in terms of his worldview. And it's hard to say whether that's really what he thinks or if that's just because he sort of looks at the current political map in Russia and figures that that's the best way to expand his popularity. He's always been very, very smart in terms of how to work a crowd, very powerful speaker. And I think most importantly, maybe even in this kind of 21st century world, is that he's really smart online. This guy is a blogger at heart. He knows how to riff online. He knows how to make jokes. And I think that as he kind of moves forward, he sort of resonates really well in this very cynical world of Russian politics, perhaps painting himself something as sort of the knight in shining armor versus sort of the evil Putin.
Reporter Charles Maines, always great to speak with you. Thanks.
Thank you.